Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show podcast. Shout out to the underdogs, my people, and the occasional Trump supporter that might have accidentally found the show. You've made it to the right place if you want to get personal about the news and the culture. Please enjoy this mini episode of the Gregory Neesmith Show.
You ever hear somebody say or question, how hard is it to be a woman? Now, most of the time that's men saying that. I don't think women say this, but I've, you know, heard people say, is it really that hard to be a woman? How hard is it? I struggle too. We all struggle. I don't think women's struggles are any harder than anybody else's. How hard is it to be a woman? You ever heard somebody say something like that? I know I have. And have you ever messed up, made a mistake with a friend, a coworker, or a loved one? I know there's been times in my career where I missed a deadline or I did something to make a loved one very angry. And I felt like one of the ways that I could make it up to them was to do something for them, give them a gift, sometimes overgift. And what I mean by overgift is if I normally give somebody a $10 gift card at work at the annual holiday party, if I really messed up earlier that year, messed up with one of their promotions, some paperwork, missed a deadline for a project, I'm like, instead of the $10 Starbucks gift card, I'm going to give them a $100 one. I'm over gift. I'm going to make up something I did for a mistake I made, for me making it hard on that person, that loved one, that coworker. Or, you know, if I made it hard on my romantic interest. I'll never forget, I'm a big basketball fan, and I remember watching the Lakers in the early 2000s, Shaq and Kobe. Kobe Bryant, they nicknamed him the Black Mamba. They say he's like the second, or he's like the next closest thing to Michael Jordan, who most people believe is the greatest basketball player to ever play basketball. And I remember, the story very clearly, but him and his wife got into something, and I think potentially they were going to break up. There might have been some infidelity involved. It was looking bad. And I think the news story was that they ended up working it out and that they were going to stay together. And he got her this gift. I want to say it was like an 8-carat diamond ring or something like that. And, you know, that's a different magnitude of my $10 gift card being a $100 gift card. But I get it, right? Someone makes a mistake. They try to overgift. They try to make up for it because they're like, oh, I made it real bad for you. And I want to give you something to show you that I'm sorry. And because I made it so hard. And I'm going somewhere. This is all related to how I just kicked this off, which is, have you ever met someone? They're like, how hard is it to be a woman? Is it really that hard to be a woman? It ain't that hard. Why? It's not. How hard could it be? It's hard for me too. People out there like that. And in our society, we recognize that it's hard to be certain people, be in certain groups, have certain backgrounds. And so we have celebrations, rituals. We have days or weeks or months to celebrate folks that we feel like this country, this society has made it hard for them. And so we want to celebrate them. Think about it. National Siblings Day. Because it's hard being a middle child. It's hard being the one boy and there's five girls in the family, or one girl and there's five boys. Or, you know, it's tough being siblings. Got to share stuff with them. You're the youngest, or if you're the oldest, you might have to take care of all the younger ones. Like, you know, so we recognize it's hard to be a sibling, so we have a day, National Sibling Day. President, POTUS Day, which was only a few weeks ago. Now, I would think it's a hard job being the president, but they only get one day, so maybe it's not that hard. I mean, they only do it for 48 years, and then the rest of their life, they got a pension, they got an income, they got, you know, Secret Service. Life's pretty good. Like, work hard for 4 or 8 years, and then smooth sailing from then on out. So we only give them a day. So it can't be, you know, how hard could it be to be president? They only get a day to celebrate. But then there's some groups where we're like, yo, it's hard for them. And so that $10 Starbucks gift card is like, you know, I made it so hard for them. I gave them a $100 gift card. Or like Kobe's like, you know, I made it so hard for you. Let me give you this 8-carat ring. So in society, sometimes we look and we go, oh, I've made it real, real hard. So I got to make sure we celebrate them for longer than just a day. So then there's Black History Month. There was slavery, there was Jim Crow, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we're only 12%, 13% black folks of the of the population. So I get it. They're like, we've made it hard on black folks. We got to give more than a day. We give them a month. Foster care month. Foster care kids. Once again, small portion of the population, but it's tough not growing up with your parents. So it's like, you know what? We're going to give them a month. A day, a week wouldn't be enough because it's hard. So then think about how hard it must be to be a woman, or how much as a society we think holistically that we've made it hard on women, or the mistakes we've made with how we treat women, interact with them, that we're like, yo, we got to celebrate them for a month. Whole month. Half of the population, think about it. Half of the population, we think that it's so hard to be a woman that we're like, no, we Women's Day, nah, that ain't enough. Women's Week, nah, no, we got at least celebrate women for a month because we've done made it hard here for women. So just let that sink in for a second. For those who are like, oh, it ain't hard being a woman, it must be very hard being a woman. So hard that we think that we should celebrate an entire month for literally half of the population. And for those of you who think I'm making a crazy analogy here, how many people have been thinking there should be a month for men celebrating the contributions to society and culture for men, the men's month? You know why you don't think there should be a men's month? Because you don't think it's as hard being a man as it is to be a woman. Maybe we'll get a men's day. But I think when it comes to some of the sexual assaults and just overall violence towards women that women here have to navigate. And Barry, who called earlier, mentioned what was going on with the young ladies. Some of them teenage girls at the time who were part of the Olympics and the sexual misconduct that was happening there. Whether it's fair wages for the work that women put in. I mean, the list could go on and on about the challenges that it is to be a woman here in America and around the world. And so the next time someone goes, is it hard to be a woman? What are they talking about? What are they complaining about? Think about it. We don't overgift. We don't celebrate or acknowledge or try to make up for things that we don't think there's been a wrong. And there's a reason why there's a Black History Month. There's a reason why there's a Women's History Month. And there's likely a reason why there isn't a Men's History Month. With that, it is March. And Women's History Month is a celebration of the contributions to history, culture, and society that women have made. It's been celebrated throughout the month of March since 1987, so relatively young month-long celebration. In 1978, the school district of Sonoma, California, organized a week-long celebration of women's contributions to culture, history, and society. And that is really the beginnings of what we now call Women's History Month. In the years that followed, other communities, organizations, and school districts throughout the country started celebrating Women's History Week as well. And then in 1980, President Jimmy Carter declared the week of March 8th as National Women's History Week. The year after that, Congress passed a resolution establishing a national celebration. And then 6 years later, in 1987, the National Women's History Project petitioned Congress to expand the event to the entire month. And we now have Women's History Month, which is roughly 92, basically 31 years old as a national month-long holiday. You know, one of my beliefs is, as underdogs, it is awesome for us to know our history and understand it. But I also don't want us to lose the moment that there's people doing things right now in our life that we get to acknowledge now and not wait until they're gone. But let me go to some of the Facebook Live comments. Madeline says, maybe there should be a Men's History Month. She says, I do, because you do have a lot of good men out there as well. And there is a balance. We must find that balance. And let me be very clear. Shout out to all the men out there too. And I don't, you know, believe that if we celebrate some group of people or individuals, that means we have to then denigrate some other group. I think we can shout people out and that's all good. And also reminds me of one of my favorite principles, is which is like, acknowledge people for whatever struggle that they feel like they are going through, and try not to get into comparisons of pain, because this isn't a competition. And so shout out to Miss Martinez, who says she wants to make sure we shout out the men too. And I ain't mad at you. And Salim says, shout out to the ladies. I say shout out to the ladies too. It's, you know, shout out to the ladies. Shout out to the ladies. Ladies night, ladies month, ladies day. And let's see. Also, Salim says he wants to shout out some folks like Harriet Tubman, Susan B. Anthony, Gloria Steinem, Angela Davis, Eleanor Roosevelt, Michelle Obama, Oprah Winfrey. And Madeline also says it is extremely hard to be a woman, especially if you have to play daddy, mommy, friend, and mentor, as well as being a good employer and just an overall all warm heart woman that have strong beliefs. We women are strong. Yeah, hey, this, like I said, it ain't easy. This show here is for underdogs. And, you know, for me, underdogs is this idea of someone who feels like they're in a situation where the odds are stacked against them to win, where they struggle. And for a lot of women, I say the word underdog and they go, yeah, they get it. And I get it too. And, you know, one of the things we do here is fight for underdogs to rediscover how special they are. And so special shout out to the women out there. And some of the ones you mentioned, Madeline, which are out there being more than just moms. They're being dads and they're being mentors, friends. They're doing it all. And they shouldn't have to, because support is a big deal for all of us, men and women. With that, give some shout outs. So, you know, Salim shouted some folks out. Madeline did. Chow did. I'm going to shout some people out, too. And, you know, we talk politics here. So, of course, one of the folks I want to shout out is a politician, or was a politician.
But when you are a catalyst for change in any society, you have to be prepared to take the insults, the abuses, the misapprehensions, the skeptics, those who are not ready for change. You have to be prepared to take all of these kinds of situations that would immediately develop when you go against a tradition in this country.
I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am Black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am not the candidate of any political bosses or fat cats or special interests.
For those who don't know who that was, and I'll pause for a second to see if anyone can guess who that was. I'll see if someone writes the name on the Facebook Live, but I'll give a description of the person before I reveal their name, and let's see if someone knows who that was. But the voice you just heard was that of an American politician. In 1968, the person you just heard became the first African-American congresswoman. In 1972, she became the first major party Black candidate to make a bid for the U.S. presidency. She represented New York in the House of Representatives for 7 terms. The main things she fought for were education opportunities, and social justice. And in 1969, she became one of the founding members of the Congressional Black Caucus. I've gone to the Facebook Live. I've seen some folks who they've said who they think that was. And I will say, Salim, that you are correct. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. And then I will say the woman's name. And we will continue to shout out some folks for Women's History Month. Because, you know, I like shouting out underdogs and appreciating folks. Name where you're calling from.
Deborah. Manhattan.
Deborah from Manhattan. Talk to me.
Barbara Jordan.
Talk to me. How you doing?
Fine. That's Miss Jordan.
It is. And she's an awesome person too. Shirley Chisholm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. But that's a good guess. Hey, we get to shout her out too.
Okay.
We get to shout both out. Appreciate you. Bye, Deborah. And yes, that was. And shout out to Miss Jordan too. And that was Shirley Chisholm. 1968, she became the first African American congresswoman. Again, represented. She was in the House of Representatives for 7 terms, representing part of New York. And she was, you know, 1972 became the first major party Black candidate to make a bid for the presidency. So shout out to Shirley and shout out to Salim and shout out to Deborah for both making guesses and, you know, shouting out some folks that we owe a lot to. And actually, I'll read one Shirley quote that caught my attention. She said, "The emotional, sexual, and psychological stereotyping of females begins when the doctor says, 'It's a girl.'" And to me, that encapsulizes how challenging it can be to be a woman, that literally from day one, there's pressures and challenges that come from being a part of the society when you're female. Shout out to Shirley Shittum, and shout out to Deborah and Celine for both guessing who it was, and shout out to Celine for on the Facebook Live saying Shirley. All right. One thing here, so since we're talking politics, before I move on to someone in the business realm, is one thing I learned too. You know, talk about words of wisdom you learn from women. One of my mentors used to always remind me this when talking about voting rights. And I remember one time I said to her, I was like, "Hey, I learned in school, like, you know, women got the right to vote in the 1920s and the suffrage movement. And like, man, you know, that's when women got the right to vote." And what she reminded me for context is that that is incomplete. That women in federal elections and having the right to vote in the United States actually didn't happen until the 1960s in the Voting Rights Act. And that is when all women in the United States were able to vote in federal elections. And so I'm just sharing with you something I learned, that sometimes we learn stuff in school and it's partly true, but it's incomplete. And so the better way to say it is that women got the right to vote in the 1960s, not the 1920s. Although that's part of the timeline, it's not the total timeline. And then obviously, in terms of everyone getting the right to vote, the Voting Rights Act obviously was for African Americans, both men and women, and that is when, in the 1960s, that all Americans got the right to vote. How many people buy Pepsi? How many people have had some Doritos lately? If you have, this woman is actually the CEO of that company. And again, I'm not going to say the name. I'm going to play a clip, and then we're going to see who can guess who this woman is. This woman's history mom. We're going to celebrate them. First of all, celebrate my mom, because that's the most impactful woman in my history, in my life, that I want to celebrate. And then obviously we're going to expand it out beyond there. If you want to shout out your mom, shout out some of your aunties, some of the women in your life, shout them out. People love being acknowledged, especially while they're still here. All right, take a guess. Who's this? Business world. We talk politics. We talk culture. We talk personal development. And also, you know, I'm a businessman. I like to talk business sometimes, too. Let's play this clip.
Now, my three lessons I'd like to share with you. First, please be a lifelong student. You know, when we are kids, we ask questions like, why is the sky blue? Why is the bird flying so high? But for some reason, as we get older, that curiosity goes away. And if we're happy with the knowledge we have, then we are actually going to atrophy. So please remain a lifelong student. Don't lose that curiosity. Second, whatever you do, throw yourself into it. Throw your head, heart, and hands into it. I look at my job not as a job. I look at it as a calling, as a passion. And I don't care about the hours. I don't care about the hardship, because to me, everything is a joy. So whatever you do, please look upon it as a calling and a passion, not as a job, not as something temporary. The third and the most important one, please help others rise. Greatness comes not from a position, but from helping build the future. All of us in positions of power have an obligation to pull others up.
Can you guess who that was? It's Women's History Month, and all month long we're going to be shouting out women. And the person you just heard is the chief financial officer and president of PepsiCo. She's one of the top female executives in the U.S. She's one of only, I believe it's, the number escapes me, but literally about 5% to 6% of the CEOs of the Fortune 500, the top largest companies in the United States, only about 5% of them are headed up by women. And she is one of them that you just heard. She was born in India to a very in a very conservative town. Her whole life, she was a bit of a rebel that did not follow social norms. She earned a few degrees in India, but still didn't feel like she had enough education. She decided to move to America and attend Yale. This was unheard of for a woman in India to do at the time. When she first got to America, she struggled financially. She would wear her sari everywhere because she could not afford any other clothes. In 1980, she finished her master's in public and private management at Yale, and she began as a chief deal maker at Pepsi. And she would eventually become CFO and then eventually become the CEO of Pepsi. Does anybody know who that is? A lot of y'all buying her products, eating them Doritos, sipping on some Pepsi. It's Women's History Month. Let's shout out. She's one of the 5% of women who actually are the CEOs of a Fortune 500 company. Women make up over 50% or around 50% of the population, but only 5% of the folks that run our companies, or at least the big ones. Going once, going twice, three times. Shout out to Indra Nooyi, who is the CEO of PepsiCo here in the U.S. and one of the 5% of women who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. I said I was going to talk about CEOs, women, and security clearances. I'll tell you about the CEO piece in a second, but just bear with me because there's one more woman I want to shout out, at least in today's program, and then I have a question for you that I want you to think about, which is, who makes a better CEO? A woman or a man? Who do you think makes a better CEO? And not your qualitative answer, not your subjective answer, not even potentially even biased or unbiased you may have, but based on like some actual stats. I got some stats. I looked up performance of companies run by women versus companies run by men, and there's actually some stats that show who is performing a little better than the other. Let me know your guess. A woman CEO or a male CEO? And not that it's like, you know, us against them or them against us. Just perspective. You know, what do I say? Men lie, women lie. Stats don't. But even that's not true because sometimes stats are misleading. But anyway, we'll get back to that. I want to do one more shout out and then I'll answer the question about who makes a good CEO, a man, a woman, or both. Who's up next? Let's see if you can guess this person, this woman.
So what comes next in this conversation? I mean, how do you take it from a hashtag to the real work that has to be done?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I inserted myself, right? Because the work was already being done and we want to expand on that. I think what we've seen over the last month is mass disclosure across social media. And as much as that is empowering, it is also problematic in some ways. People don't have a way to process. People don't have a way to think about what happens after they disclose their experience with sexual violence. And so one of the things we want to do is really support survivors. We want to find ways to give resources to people in communities that don't have resources. And we also want to activate folks who are ready to do the work of ending sexual violence.
Does anyone know who that was? The woman that was just speaking about the Me Too movement and about how we get to really bring to light some of the sexual misconduct that has been happening, especially to women in our society, and that now there's a forum and a place for folks to say that out loud, but then also get whatever support that's needed. And also to bring to justice those who have committed these crimes. Let me know if you can guess who that woman was. She gets to be celebrated. In my opinion, doesn't get celebrated enough. And on top of that, she should have been on the Time cover. Time's Person of the Year were the Silence Breakers. And she, the woman you just heard, did not make the cover. And I believe that she should have. It's my humble opinion. And shout out to Salim, who says he had to look that one up, fam, which was the previous one, which was Indra Nooyi, who's the CEO of PepsiCo. Y'all sipping on those Pepsis, sipping on eating those Doritos, where there's a woman who's running things over there, and she's one of the 5% of women CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Shout out to all the women CEOs breaking barriers, busting through glass ceilings, as they call it. But the person I just played, talking about the Me Too movement, another woman I want to acknowledge, Time Magazine last year said the person of the year was the Silence Breakers. And to me, she should have been one of the women on the cover. Let me know if you know who that was who was speaking. And shout out to Salim, who says it. That was Tarana Burke, who is a civil rights activist that started the Me Too movement back in 2006. That's right, not 2017, 2006. Not 2017. Shout out to Alyssa Milano and some of the other folks. But shout out to Tarana Burke, who started the Me Too movement in 2006. In 2017, obviously, it became a global phenomenon that raised awareness about sexual harassment, abuse, and assault in society. She was included as one of the silence breakers in Time Magazine's issue about who was the person of the year. She grew up in the Bronx, shout out to New York. Throughout her childhood and teenage years, she was unfortunately sexually assaulted and raped. This fueled her passion for helping other women who have been through similar situations. And shout out to Ms. Burke and all the folks that have been fighting for women's rights and women's safety. To me, this discussion, this movement is incomplete when we don't acknowledge folks like Tarana Burke, who started this movement that has really gain momentum, right? It's not a new topic, right? The sexual assault and stuff like that has been happening for a long time, but to actually get it in the front of us as opposed to going on in the background and in silence is a big, big deal. Shout out to Tarana Burke. All right. I want to play this poem just because it's my show, but also I just feel like a good moment to play this. And then I'll answer the question that I asked, which is like, who makes a better CEO, men, women, or it's a tie? Like, I'll answer the question. I want to hear your guesses. But first, shout out to this civil rights activist, author, and poet, and the first nonfiction bestseller ever published by an African-American woman. Let me see if you can guess who this is.
Many people wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes, the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist, the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, it's in the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breasts, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palms of my hands, the need for my care, because I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman, all you women and me.
Who was that? Y'all better know who that was. And Miss Clark, who just called in while it was playing, said the name. So I'm going to shout Miss Clark out because she guessed who that was. I'll look over at the Facebook Live. The phone lines are open to Let me know, who was that talking about phenomenal women? And yes, women are phenomenal. Name it, where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Deborah.
All right, who was that?
Miss Angelou.
Yes, it was. Ding, 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 ding. Come on now, doesn't she still just make you smile and just be grateful?
Everybody should know that.
Come on, hey. And if they don't, now they know.
Exactly.
Hey, I appreciate you, Deborah.
Take care. Bye.
All right, now. And thank you, Miss Phenomenal Woman. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye now. That was Deborah from Manhattan calling in, letting us all know that was Maya Angelou. And then also Miss Clark, who called in while it was playing on the phone lines. And I appreciate her phone call. She also said it was Maya Angelou. And Deborah and Miss Clark are both correct. Man, I'm probably going to play that again before the show's over, just because I just love hearing Maya's voice, her intellect, come on now, she's phenomenal. Phenomenal woman. Let me answer the question, though. I said I was going to answer, who's better as a CEO, men or women? Or both? Well, let's go to the data. A Boston-based trading company did some research and looked at the performance of Fortune 1000 companies, so the top 1,000 companies in the U.S., and looked to see of those 1,000 who had women CEOs, and about 80 of them had women CEOs from a time span of 2002 to 2014. And so what they looked at is the performance and the growth of those companies, those 80 companies that were run by women CEOs, and looked at how those 80 companies performed versus the overall stock market, which is also a somewhat, you know, indicator of how the overall market is doing. And so they use the S&P 500. And so the data looked at, if you had some money to invest, you could have invested in the broad market called the S&P 500. A lot of people trade their stocks and stuff there. A lot of us, if we have 401ks or in ETFs, a lot of times our money is in something that mirrors the S&P 500. And so the data looked at from 2012 to 2014. Put your money in like all the best companies or the biggest ones, or put your money in just the 80 companies that were run by women during that time, 2002 to 2014. And what they found is that those 80 women CEOs, those companies, during those 12 years, produced returns of 226% better than that of the S&P 500 or that of a proxy of the market. And so what they found is that the reason why they thought this was the case is that most people believe that the result of a woman becoming a CEO, which is a challenge, is because of their hard work and their intellect, and that oftentimes someone who is a CEO and a woman is like truly, truly, truly has to be like the best of the best of the best to break through all the different hurdles and obstacles that it may take to become a CEO when you're a woman or if you're a person of color. And so that doesn't mean there aren't good men CEOs, right? But at least up until now, when the playing fields tilt more male than female, that when a woman does become CEO, she's a bad mama jamma. She's a phenomenal woman because it took a lot to get there. And when they do get there, they show up and they show out 226% better than the market from 2002 to 2014. Get yourself a woman CEO. At least consider it. And not as like a plan B or not as a nice to have, but it might be the difference between where you are and taking yourself to the next level. And at the end of the day, we should always just pick the best candidate possible. However, diversity is hard. It's a challenge. We like to be with people who look like us, sound like us, do like us. But diversity over time has shown that you get a better mix of intellect, you get better decision making, and in the end, diverse teams, diverse companies end up being winners. And so even if you won't do it because it's the right thing to do, do it because you want to win. Shout out to all those women CEOs, both past and present. Just remember, get some women in your life if you don't have them. Diversity is not just the right thing, but it's a good thing for all of us. And so shout out to all the women who've come from the past and those who have helped us in the present and those that will help us in the future. It's Women's History Month. And so not just today, but throughout the month, we will acknowledge and celebrate women who make things happen and show up and show out.
Thank you for listening to the Gregory Neesmith Show podcast, where we get personal about the news and the culture. And as always, I leave you with my favorite quote, underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.